Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cosmere Connections. We're a bunch of book-loving nerds rereading Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere series. From book 1 to book 16 million, we'll be uncovering every secret connection there is to find. Today, we are joined by Swiggity Swoo.
Hello. Thanks for joining us.
John.
Nope, that didn't come through, apparently.
No, not at all.
Not at all. And Kay.
Hey, how's it going?
And I'm Rita Warrior, and today we're going to be covering Mistborn, The Hero of Ages, Part 3, The Broken Skies, Chapters 34 through 37. We're just going to jump right on into it. Swiggity, I believe the floor is yours.
Well, all right. Chapter 34. I'm just going to read the epigraph. So, Ferrochemy, it should be noted, is the power of balance. Of the three powers, solely it was known to men before the conflict between preservation and ruin came to a head. In Ferrochemy, power is stored, then later drawn upon. There is no loss or gain of energy, merely a changing of time and the rate of its use. It's kind of interesting to think about. You know, that really spells out how it basically conserves all the energy, and you're not getting any more power, you're not losing any power in the process. It's literally just a matter of how fast you access it.
Which is where the terms like end neutral investiture and positive for Allomancy, and we see in the next chapter, and negative, where you lose power.
Spoilers.
Oh. It's in the next chapter.
Spoilers from my chapter. Gosh,
I'm
reading.
Sorry. Okay. How rude. Oh,
God, spoiling the chapters we're here to talk about.
Exactly.
Devil's in the details.
So shifting the balance.
Spoiling the chapter. Kay won't even read her epigraph.
But I'll talk about it. I'll talk about it.
I don't know what this epigraph has to do with this chapter, to be honest, because it's all about Marsh, and it's more about Hemallergy.
Yeah.
So basically, it is a Marsh POV, and he's kind of walking through this town that's nearby Mount Tyrion, which is the Ashmount closest to Luthadel, and he's still, like, under Ruin's influence. He's still letting Ruin control him completely. But there's this tiny sliver of him that is self-aware and that is waiting for the right time to do something. But for right now, he's kind of just Ruin's tool for destruction. Mm-hmm. And he's walking through the town. People are scared of him, but they're too scared to run, which I thought was really cool imagery.
Frozen in fear.
Yeah. This town, it's important to mention, has been kind of abandoned by Elend as the citizens see it. And they're kind of starving. And it's not a pleasant sight. But Marsh has a goal in mind. He's here for this mansion, this noble house. And he kills the guard, he kills some old lady, and he comes into the mansion, and we get a good view of, like, what it's actually like to see through an Inquisitor's spiked eyes. Kind of the details that you'd be seeing if you had metal vision like he does. And he's there, there's this guy who's, like, drunk out of his mind, and you can see, like, the way that Ruin kind of twists, like, their minds as an Inquisitor, because it talks about him, like, wishing the guy was awake so that he could enjoy, like, the dude's reaction as he's getting murdered.
Yeah.
And it also
very morbid.
Yeah. It also had mentioned, like, how the earthquakes below were, like, a beautiful chorus to him.
Earthquakes! It begins.
So he ends up, like, killing this guy and putting this, I think it's a bronze spike, Inquisitor spike in him to suck up his power, which it turns out this guy was a smoker. we learn a little bit about hemallergy and how, like, you get more of the power if the spike goes directly into somebody. But in this case, like, if there was an alive person that you spiked through spiking the dead person, it's kind of hard to explain, but in this case, he's spiking somebody and then he's taking the spike out and bringing it to another location. And apparently that does not transfer as much power as if it was done at the same time.
I say, like, we saw at the very beginning of this book, we saw Marsh and the Inquisitors taking a spike and driving a spike through a person into another person. So that's the best way to transfer power via hemallergy.
It's like the proper way. But this is like the quick and dirty way.
It's not quick, but, you know, proper. It is dirty.
Spikes True. Have like a half-life.
He ruminates on that a little bit, and then he skips town. People are begging him, though, as a representative of the old rule, to, like, bring back the obligators. Let us worship them, you know. They're thinking they're seeing the error of their ways, hoping that, like, the Lord Ruler will save them or something. Because they're starving. And Marsh is kind of like, you had your chance. And he walks off. And as he's leaving the town, the Ash Mount Tyrion goes off. And lava starts flooding towards the town. And he thinks to himself, starving is the least of these people's worries.
Ruin just drops a freaking volcano on them. Oi, oi, oi.
It's a very morbid chapter. Good way to start it off.
There was one other thing, like, that really come is that they had, like, ninja stars. He had, like, ninja stars that were used for Lord Ruler ceremonies.
Oh, so remember in book one when Vin and Kelsier break into the Kredic Shaw and she ends up blocking the, like, triangles with the book. Mm-hmm. Those are the same weapon that
I do remember that. I remember in the final Empire it said it cuts their hands, like, holding them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was brutal.
But, like, my main question is, Vin, with all of her tenacity and upgrades over the time, she has never once tried, like, sharpening any of her coins or anything to mimic this?
No need.
I don't think she really needs to.
True, but, like, I imagine it's more difficult to push, like, a round, blunt object through a person than it is to do, like, a sharp triangular.
But that also means that it's harder for your enemies to use it against you.
Touche.
She does the opposite, where she puts, like, the little cloth around them for silent jumping.
Well, some of them, anyway.
Also, then there's the horseshoes.
Also, it's easier to just get coins than it is to get coins and then sharpen the coins.
Yeah.
I never understood why she didn't just get nails. They're at least pointy.
Yeah. But there's... Vin's not at the level where she could dictate what part of the nail she would be pushing on. So you could be pushing on, like, the blunt end, and that would hit a person's chest.
Than you would be with a coin?
Yeah. Meanwhile, Kelsier certainly could have done that. He could have...
Maybe.
Pushed on the right end. Yeah, that would have been smart.
I always thought it was interesting that they use coins. Like, there's definitely a million things you could do. It could just be bits of metal. Like, they could have little, like, Mistborn bullets. But instead it's coins. And I always wondered if that was supposed to be symbolic for something.
I don't know. I just think it's because coins are easy to for them to access.
I think it's ease of access, but it also was symbolic of the fact that Mistborn just throw coins away. That this is a height of status within nobility, where money should have no value at all. And we saw Kelsier kind of like that, where he was just leaving coins everywhere, but Finn was always going back and picking them up.
I do remember that from way back in the Final Empire. And the Mistborn are supposed to be the nobility anyways, so it tracks. Especially with things like ATM being so expensive.
Yeah.
It's a rich man's hobby.
Now the question is, did they make coins like that for Allomancers to use?
Coming this holiday season, special coin shot coins. Whether you want to jump around the city or shoot one through your neighbor.
Buy now and get a dozen.
Spend your money on money.
It's those coin flattening things you get at Yosemite.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a flattened penny that cost about $1.
Okay. Are we ready to talk about our next chapter?
Yeah,
I think we probably are.
Oh, sounds good. It didn't sound like that conversation was going anywhere.
Yeah, I know. Tangent.
Yeah, why don't they use dollars?
Chapter 35. In this epigraph, we learn a little bit more about hemallergy. So, hemallergy has a very high cost because it costs someone their life. To be able to use, and it is a parasitic art, because if there weren't other people who had powers, hemallergy would be useless.
So if you start spiking every single person who has powers, then at one point you're not going to have anybody to spike, and you're going to run out of that. It's a resource. Correct.
Yeah, it is. So,
I am the Inquisitor. I speak for the... I don't come up with a good rhyme between trees and goth.
So, this chapter is a spook chapter. We're back to spook in Erto. So, Spook and Breeze are out on the town. Breeze wants to try to gather more information about what's going on in the city. So they are going to a tavern, and it's one of the nicer taverns that Spook has taken Breeze to. And Spook like drops him off and is like, okay, bye, I'm going to like the sketchy part of town. And at first, Breeze protests a little bit because he's like, hey, like, I should come with you. And Spook is like, nah, you stand out too much. You're not coming. And Breeze is like, okay, I don't really want to rub ash on my face, so I'll stay. Fine. So Spook is going to the shadier part of town because he needs to confront Dern, who is the... If we remember from previously, he is the leader of the underground in Erto.
Also probably not Hoid.
Definitely not Hoid. And he has been spreading rumors about Spook. So Spook wants to confront him about these rumors. The rumors are things about Spook being part of Kelsier's crew. So Spook goes to confront him, and this is a really cool open, because he just like busts the doors open, walks in, doesn't give.
You can hear the spurs go clink, clink, clink. It's like there's a light behind him, and his shadow stretches across the saloon.
Nodding the giving of any dams.
whips out his blindfold and puts it on his face while we're walking as he's like striding down this hallway.
Strutting.
Strutting.
And he wonders how they knew he was.
Yeah, right. Comes in and is like, everyone get out.
Give me a whiskey. Put a hair in it.
So he talks to Dern and he's like, why are you like telling everyone my secrets? Like, why are you spreading that I'm part of Kelsier's crew? Also, how did you know I was part of Kelsier's crew? And Dern is like, are you an idiot? Like, it was so obvious that you were part of Kelsier's crew. Also, like, you live in the Imperial Palace. Like, you think people wouldn't recognize you?
Not exactly anonymous.
He makes a comment.
Yeah.
He makes a comment like, strange things happen with that crew. And I'm like, oh, what strange things? Like killing God, becoming a savant, becoming a misborn. Nothing strange there at all.
Well, no, he's saying that like everyone in Kelsier's crew is weird, which is fair. Like,
it's like that scene in Harry Potter when Professor McGonagall is like, why is it always you three?
You three. I don't know, Professor.
So, Dern is essentially like, I've been rumors if people realize that Quellian has like tried to kill a member of the survivor's own crew, like that will discredit him. And I want Quellian gone because he's bad for business.
Mm-hmm.
And Dern offers an alliance essentially with Spook. Spook kind of, he agrees, but he essentially is like, go talk to Breeze. He's the very obvious one who doesn't belong in this tavern.
How funny it would be if when Dern goes to that tavern, he starts talking to somebody who isn't Breeze. Like, what if Breeze has become so hidden in the fact that he was just making Spook think that he wasn't that good?
So Spook leaves, and one of the people that Dern was talking to when Spook burst in runs up and stops after as he's leaving on his way out. And asks Spook if he can help rescue his sister. Because their father was a nobleman. So Hister is half nobleman, and so is he. And the person who was keeping his little sister safe, sold her out to Quellian.
Anyone can betray you.
And it sounds like in his sister is young. She's a kid. And Spook agrees to help, but he says that he needs some help from him first. And has him go and grab 10 of his friends who are willing to do some work, some hard labor. And that is where we end the chapter.
Anybody got notes before I go over mine?
Go for it, reader.
Do it. Well,
the first one is the whole entire time you've got Kelsier whispering in his ear.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I never really liked Breeze. And I'm like, what do you mean? We love Breeze. Oh, Kelsier, man, death doesn't suit you. I'll keep that one for the spoiler section. But can I talk about the guy that came up to Spook? Can I just say what his name is? Because there's a story.
Did they mention his name in this part?
They didn't mention his name in this chapter, but I believe the next chapter we see him in, they have his name.
Okay, but I thought who is this guy?
Bringing it up here now would be fine. His name was Franson. And It was name based on a Scott Franson, who is also the inspiration for Larimar. I don't remember where that name's from.
Larimar from Warbreaker.
Okay. Brandon participated in a fundraiser at his local church by giving a name and a character in the Hero of Ages to the winner. And Aaron Yeoman, who became Aradon Yeoman, won. But Scott Franson came in second, and Brandon decided to give him a cameo as well.
Very nice.
Can I just say that if there was any character in all of the Cosmere that I would actually be able to cosplay, it's probably Larimar.
To jog your memory,
Hey, Dragonsteel's coming up.
he's in Warbreaker and he is Light Song's
Yeah.
high priest.
I remember looking it up when I wrote down that note. Now,
I keep getting Larimar and Bluefingers confused.
if you're confused on what we're talking about, don't worry, we'll get there eventually.
Come back in 2025.
Or go read Warbreaker and then come back.
Yep.
That too. But if you want to
If
read
you're
along
listening to
with
this,
us,
you
come
may
back in
have
2025.
already read it.
Yep. When we might eventually get to Warbreaker.
I hope so. I like that one. That one.
Same.
I do too.
Any other Cosmere Mistborn notes, though, for this chapter?
I was going to bring that the what you said about Kelsier. That was great. You're like, dude, it's
Not
Breeze.
cool, man. Not cool. I know
Right?
you hate nobles and all, but he was a good one. Anything else for chapter 35? Okay, chapter 36. There's a lot about hemallergy in the epigraph, so I'm going to read the entirety of it because every single thing is pretty much important. In hemallergy, the type of metal used in a spike is important, as is the positioning of that spike in the body. For instance, steel spikes take physical allomantic powers, the ability to burn pewter, tin, steel, or iron, and bestow upon the person receiving the spike. Which of these four is granted, however, depends on where the spike is placed. Spikes made from other metals steal ferrochemical abilities. For example, all of the original inquisitors were given a pewter spike, which, after first being pounded through the body of a ferrochemist, like we saw in the beginning of the book, gave the inquisitor the ability to store up healing power, though they couldn't do so as quickly as a real ferrochemist, as per the law of hemallergic decay. This obviously is where the inquisitors got their infamous ability to recover from wounds quickly, and was also why they needed to rest so much. Which answers a few questions we had in the Final Empire. Anything we want to talk about there?
This is totally random, but I was looking up what the inspiration for hemallergy was, and I found out that you can get this really cool, like, hemallergy spike necklace.
Oh, I don't know. That's a bit
I want it
morbid.
really bad. I want it so bad.
I will often send in my Seismus gifts, which there it's a white Santa, white elephant, Cosmere thing.
It's a secret Santa.
Secret
Secret
Santa.
says it.
Secret says it. I will often 3D print a spike, like a train rail spike. Spray paint it like silver, gold, whatever, and put like a googly eye on the end. Like, here's an eye spike. So if you've gotten one of those, probably for me.
The bind points kind of remind me of like acupuncture a little bit, and just triggering like different chakras and different points of tension.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if that's how it was inspired.
I would think so.
Yeah,
Though I hope nobody's
probably.
getting acupunctured through the eyes.
Yeah.
This will help you see better.
Actually, I think there is a type of acupuncture where they actually do like
Are you messing with us?
That'd be around the eyes and not the actual eyeball.
I don't know. I don't know. I just remember hearing about it at one point.
Okay.
Come down. Come on down for Iron Eyes acupuncture.
Oh.
But it's like very thin needle.
Yeah, I'm still good. I hate the little puff thing I have to do whenever I go to Eyeglass World. I don't think I can handle a spike. But on to the actual meat of the chapter. Set warns Ellen that it was a mistake for him to attend the ball because now, in his mind, he has humanized the people in the city. Set knows it won't do any good. Set knows it won't go anywhere and ask about the siege. He suggests poisoning the wells, and Ellen agrees, but says they will leave a warning message on them too. He also agrees to bully, not kill, surrounding villages. There's another earthquake, ending their discussion. I love the, we will leave a message saying this well is poison. I love that. I think if you're going to attack a city or a government, warn the people about everything you're going to do. I think that is great. Granted, I don't like how he's poisoning well, and people will probably still try and drink from it. But warning them? Amazing. That is humane right there.
They also, return. I do want to say this real quick. I did just look it up. It is around the eyes. The acupuncture.
Okay.
So it's not in the cornea.
They return to their command tent where Set comments that there still is no word from Luthadel about reinforcements or supplies, things they will need to outlast the siege. Hammond, along with Dimmu, enter. Set comments how long it has taken them to recover, and Dimmu blushes. Apparently there is a rumor that the sick ones were being punished somehow. Ellen says it's ridiculous, commenting how the mist strikes at random, even if the statistics surrounding them were not. As the three generals give their reports, Ellen realizes that Set was right. If he wanted to, Ellen could march on the city with his co-ops. But now he knows that Yeoman isn't a would-be... But now he knows that Yeoman isn't a would-be Lord Ruler. This siege would determine who Ellen is or will be. But for now, he will be what he was. Kind. He would exhaust every option, even the possible idea of having Vin sneak into the cache during a ball. Even if Yeoman had emptied it, the message must still be there. Set, Hammond, and Dimmu finish their reports and they leave, exception of Dimmu. He asks Ellen to remove him from his post as he is no longer one of the survivors in the survivor's favor. Kelsier must have determined he is unworthy to be kept safe. Ellen says that is not what happened, but Dimmu brings up the number of 16 again, this time saying that 16% got sick, and 1/16 of them remain sick even longer, for exactly 16 days to the hour. That would be terrifying, seeing that number just repeatedly show up like that. The who's got the stopwatch? No idea. Ellen calls it an anomaly, but Dimmu says the number is also of religious importance to them. Kelsier spent 16 months in the pits, and Vin was 16 when she became Mistborn. I'm going to argue against that a bit, but I get what he's trying to say. That's when she got her mist cloak and became in her
own eyes. That's when she realized she was Mistborn.
Yes. Dimmu says that the survivor is leaving this number behind so they know it is by his will. Giving him an emotional push, capital P, Ellen says that the fact Dimmu, one of Kelsier's priests, got sick is even more proof that it wasn't on his act. As Dimmu begins to accept this, shouting begins to echo throughout the camp, and an attack has possibly begun.
Poor Dimmu.
Yeah.
He hasn't done anything wrong.
Except get sick.
That wasn't even his fault.
What do you guys think? Like, I've known a number of people who have like a favorite number or a favorite series of numbers. They kind of seek them out. Have you guys ever put any stock into that? Like, if you see a number reoccurring in your life, has that ever had any kind of meaning to you?
Not really.
I know people who, like, they have, like, a lucky number or whatever, and I used to say that my lucky number was 13 because it was the unlucky number, but It's a connection that you make in your mind, and if it has relevance to you, then it has relevance to you, and it may or may not
be logical.
I'm trying to say something without being offensive, and it's just not going to happen. Somebody's going to be offended. So if that's you, sorry, but it's just not real. It's just not. It's coincidence.
Well, the thing...
It's kind of that...
Sorry.
Go ahead, Reader.
We have favorite numbers as much as we have... Or at least I have a favorite number as much as like one has like a favorite color. And...
Sure.
Granted, there's...
That doesn't mean it has any sort of special like... meaning or anything.
It's no. Favorite. Exactly. And we don't know where these numbers come. And when you start looking for things, they start to become prevalent. Like, there was a really funny YouTube video a while back where Back to the Future predicted 9/11. And they had like dozens of, Marty's wearing the exact same outfit as the movie where the guy tightropes across the Twin Towers. And when the DeLorean leaves in the 1980s, you can see a sign that has the number 9 and the two red streaks create an 11. And there are so many things. And when they knock over the pine tree and it turns from dual pines mall to single pines mall, towers, pines, towers. Once you start looking at these things, like it stops becoming like, oh, I can actually see the thing right there. And it all makes so much sense. But you got to take a step back and ask, is that like an actual reoccurrence or is that you just formulating that?
There's this thing called the Bedard-Meinhof phenomenon or recency bias or the frequency illusion, which basically says that, you know, there are two reasons for this phenomenon. Like it's basically when you hear about something and then you keep seeing it or you keep hearing about it. And the two reasons that are cited are basically selective attention, which means your brain is subconsciously seeking out more information on the subject. And the second is confirmation bias, which means every time you see something related to the subject, your brain tells you that it's proof the subject has gained popularity overnight. Mm-hmm. There was a time in my life, though, where every single day I would see the number 666 in a different place.
Jeez.
Like a different... Every single time, like for like a long time, for like a year. And like, I kept telling myself, you know, like what John said, it's like, you know, I'm just looking for this at this point. But it did start to creep me out. I'm not going to lie.
I would just like to take a moment to acknowledge that amazing science drop, Swiggity. Like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, dude's just like off the top of his head. I am a science professor now, and I'm going to teach you some psychology. Bam! That was awesome. Mm-hmm. Yes!
And I will say, like...
Cosmere Connection.
Like, Cosmere fans, we have sort of started to do this with the number 16. Like, especially after this part and all this, we will start to see, like, even in my little... The comment in the epigraph about, oh, the original Inquisitor, I was like, was there 16 original Inquisitors? How many of there were there? Or I will go out and I'll be reading something completely different and they will mention the number 16. And I'm like, okay, so this is in the Cosmere now. Just
that's
based on the number.
A little bit different though, because the 16 association is artificially created by Brandon Sanderson.
So... But it's seeing it in other things and like associating them into the Cosmere. And in my mind, I'm like, shoot, I feel like there was a West Wing one, and I can't remember what it was, but I'm like, oh, so the West Wing takes place in the Cosmere, confirmed. And there was a time when me and my ex, whenever we saw the number 16, we're like, oh, this is in the Cosmere now. Star Wars is in the Cosmere. Or, man, I can't pull up an example off the top of my head, but I remember a lot of moments like that.
I love that. I want to steal that now. Every time I see 16, I'm like, oh, that car. It's from Roshar.
Mm-hmm. But Damu seems to have, like, I know we're talking about how it has no, like, real-world evidence, but, like, the odds do seem to be specific. 16%, 1/16th.
16, what was it, 16 days to the hour? Huh?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. The 16 days to the hour thing is kind of bananas. Mm-hmm. That one is a little suspicious.
Suspicioso.
Who knows? We'll have to read and find out, I suppose.
Rappo.
Anything else for this chapter? I feel like I never get like the fun chapters where we can talk about a thing for hours on end.
I guess I just felt bad for Demu at this stage because he's just like beating himself up, you know. He like thinks he lost faith, but I do love Ellen's way of like turning it around for him and be like, "Are you kidding me? Like, you have the most faith."
Well, we can.
I thought that was a really sweet.
We can take our little comments about, oh, you start to see things in that and apply it to that, where Demu, this religion, as new as it is still trying to find itself, and they're at the point where everything nowadays is either, you know, caused by ruin or helped by Kelsier. And the myths they have associated with Kelsier at this point, and they're like, oh, they have to be Kelsier's will. And if a bad thing happens, that means you're cursed. If a good thing happens, that means you're blessed. And that goes into real world religions all the time, where you start to associate that. And sometimes we just forget that some things do happen just by chance, or maybe there is another plan behind the scenes. Who knows?
But that's like a huge theme of like Mistborn and the Cosmere, of like, what is the difference between believing in something and then that belief causing you to act and bring that into reality versus like it actually existing? It's like the power of faith versus like the power of faith.
Yep. John, do you want to cover your Koloss centered 37?
Let's do it. Hemallergic decay was less obvious in Inquisitors that had been created from Mistborn. Since they already had elemental powers, the addition of other abilities made them awesomely strong. In most cases, however, Inquisitors were created from Mistings. It appears that Seekers, like Marsh, were the favored recruits. For when Mistborn were not available, an Inquisitor with enhanced bronze abilities was a powerful tool for searching out Ska Mistings.
Well, now we know why they needed all those Ska Mistings.
Mm-hmm. Now we know why they were so focused on Marsh. And why Inquisitors could always seemingly find Ska Mistings or Mistings, really, when they shouldn't have.
Nope, can't say that yet. Spoiler. So, an attack comes on Ellen's camp from Phadrig City, which, you know, we were kind of waiting for that. Vin takes care of it, but not before chasing down a Mistborn she senses with bronze, but never quite catches a good glimpse of. Even using Duralumin, she can't catch the other Mistborn. He just kind of falls off her Seeker radar. Vin realizes that the enemy Mistborn was distracting her from something, and she races back and finds that, no, it wasn't that they were trying to attack the camp. Well, what happened? It turns out Yeoman had sent a detachment of siege weapons to attack the Koloss, making them frenzy and kill each other so that the friendly forces of Luthadel would be down a significant advantage. Then they burned the siege weapons to keep Ellen from getting them. Ellen decides that to prevent that kind of sneakiness in the future, he's going to give half the Koloss to Vin, and when she goes to take them over, they're ritually tearing the skins off of their dead. Human tells Vin they need more. There are too many swords. Vin asks about Koloss babies, but Human says she needs to give them more. Which is really confusing to her, until finally Vin orders Human to show her how to make more. So Human takes a Koloss corpse to the Human camp, rips the blue skin and some spikes from a corpse of the Koloss, and then finds a dying Human. Vin stops him just before he can pin the blue skin to the Human with the little spikes. Vin realizes that that is how Koloss are made. Human says, "I am human."
In the most, and that's the end, like, of the dramatic reveal. Very sad.
Like, oh my god.
That was... I remember putting down the book in this chapter. The "I am human"
right?
is great. That is an amazing line. And... because you think the whole time it's just... it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
And it shows an intelligence. Oh.
So, do we know, like, when that Koloss is made, does the personality of the Koloss, what little there is, come from the spike, or is it from the dying human?
It's from the spike, if I remember correctly. They essentially lose all of...
How much are we willing to talk about this in the spoiler-free section, Kay?
No, I'm this isn't something that's really talked about in this book. This
I just want information.
And
sure.
I have learned, if you look up things about Koloss spikes, this is not spoilers for this book, because we don't really... Yeah. So essentially
it's like a wob or something.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So essentially what happens is that that when the person becomes a Koloss, they lose all of their identity and their memories. And all that is left is the personality of the Kolosses that we see. That, like, the rage and the boredom, like... which are the two emotions that a Koloss has.
Gotcha. So it's not kind of like Marsh, where when he became an Inquisitor, he still was Marsh, like, essentially.
Yeah, so
just heavily influenced.
The Koloss spikes twist the soul more so than the Inquisitor spikes do.
So brutal.
Mm-hmm.
I have things I want to say, but I want to save them for the spoiler section, just in case.
I feel like I know what you're talking about.
John, you moved so fast, I didn't even have time to go to my notes.
Yeah, when I was doing my notes, I was trying to get them done in a hurry, because, yeah.
I don't
remember exactly why, but I knew I was in a hurry.
Understand. Like, there was a part where Vin's fighting off soldiers on horseback. And I think, like, she has a moment where she's like, I don't want to kill this person. And even as far back in Empire, we made, like, Batman jokes. But, like, she doesn't have to save him either. How old do I have to be?
Yeah, like how she, like, wasn't holding back against these guys.
Mm-hmm. But she wasn't going out of her way to kill them directly either. She was letting them kill each other via stupidity or horses. Mass confusion. The Mistborn that Vin chased. Any ideas on who that might be? Do we think it's Yeoman? Do we think he has a different Mistborn?
Well, I feel like we all know who it is.
Yes, we do.
We do, but this is the spoiler-free part where I'm trying to be...
At this point, I honestly had no idea who it was or who it could possibly be, because it could honestly be anyone. Like, they met a lot of people at the party, and as we know from, like, from previous books, some of the most unassuming noble people can be Mistborn, like Sean Alariel.
Mm-hmm. So it's either got to be Ellen's friend who he met at the
ball. It could just be an unnamed Mistborn.
It's got to be him, Yeomond, or Melland has returned.
Or Kelsier.
Now Kelsier's like possessing Spook and haunting him. My money's on Melland. He's come back for revenge.
But don't forget, Kelsier also is cursing Demu. That's why he fell.
Touché. Did anybody feel...
He is everywhere.
He is a god. When someone asks if you're a god, you say yes. Nobody's going to get my references. Okay. Did anybody feel bad that a lot of the Koloss died, or is that more of just statistical, oh, well, the odds kind of suck now?
No, they said a large number died. I can't remember what the fraction was. Something like half.
Yeah, I think it was about half. But, like, are we sad that the Koloss died, or are we sad that it will now be a more difficult siege?
Well, knowing now that the Koloss are people.
This makes things more difficult. With 10,000 fewer Koloss, suddenly the forces were much more evenly matched. Ellen could maintain his siege, but storming the city would be far more risky.
Yes, I know there were people, but like at this point we didn't. But like you had to have that shock of, oh, the Koloss. Oh no. Anyway. This chapter is all about references and me tonight.
I guess so.
I even have a line here. Ellen pulls out his DS and trades the Koloss to Vin for a Kadabra. I don't think anybody's going to get that reference anymore.
I do.
What do you... I literally play Pokemon all the time on my DS, so, like, don't know what you're talking about. I laughed at your joke. It was...
Well, thank you very much.
Except she didn't get a Kadabra. She got an Alakazam.
Yeah.
Touché. Exactly. I'm so glad you guys know.
I mean, it's Pokemon. It's like the most popular thing in the world right now.
True. I've commented in the spoiler section, but I'm going to bring it up here because now... we can actually kind of talk about Koloss. Where do the skins come from? Still doesn't make sense. If the skins are something that have to be traded from the Koloss to the weakened person, the dying person, that means where did the skins come from?
Nobody knows.
I always imagined it was like the first generation of Koloss when they were first formed, like... the skin didn't used to be blue. It's just blue now because it's dead and been repurposed over and over and over again.
Like,
that's horrifying.
That is really dark. This is the skin of my great-great-great-great-grandmother. On a technicality. But like, two...
it's kind of wholesome.
Two chapters ago, it was brought up that Hemallergy would... if rampant, would kill all the Alamancy who would die off, right? You start spiking everybody and then there's a spike.
Well, no, that's not what is necessarily up. I think that's what we were, but it's that Alamancy, that Hemallergy requires a host. Oh, it requires another source of power that is transferred.
Yeah. But I'm
stop
saying,
me if I'm is wrong this... right now. Stop me if I'm wrong right now. Let me finish.
Okay. You say stop me if I'm wrong, and then shut up.
No, I say stop me if I'm wrong with what I'm about to say next. Have the epigraphs talked about the Chondra blessings in relation?
Not yet, I don't think.
Not really, no.
Okay. Then I won't say what I was going to say.
I was trying to say maybe the skins are sort of a tap limit on the Koloss, saying you cannot have any more than this number of Koloss. Period. Like, the Lord Ruler created these skins either when he ascended or other horrifying, I don't want to think about ways. But basically, he made it so there can never be more than this many Koloss.
Well, but the swords is how you control the population of Koloss.
Yeah, but I'm saying if there's no skins, then there's no, you can't have any more. Like, there's an upper threshold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because any old dude could make another sword for the Koloss.
Yeah.
But that's the trick. Who makes the skins these? Are just tarps that painted that got painted blue. It's blue canvas. They don't want you to.
Maybe. I love how Vin's like, oh, show me how you procreate. Human was very not wanting to talk about that. Show me how you guys make more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something anybody would really like to talk about.
I don't know. There's like a whole there's also kind of interest- about that.
It was also kind of interesting, like, the soft control of her, like, she had to like kind of like let him do what he wanted to while still like controlling him in a way. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Like, what, how far could you take that? Like, could you have somebody like unlock a safe for you if you don't know the combination, but like make them put it in?
I would think yes, because that kind of goes back to what Breeze talked about long, long ago, how you could, well, Hammond and Breeze argued how you could not force somebody to commit a bank robbery, but you could put them in the mindset to do it themselves.
But with the control from the hemolytic spikes, I think that's what you're saying, Swiggity, correct?
Yeah.
I think you could, because, like, with Ruin, but you would have to be, like, God tier power level, because with Ruin and his control of Marsh, we know that he can make Marsh do things like read things out loud, like
okay, but like
Marsh,
but you cannot mind control a Koloss to like punch in this digit code if you do not know the digit code, but you can order the Koloss to do it themselves if they know it.
Theoretically, if a Koloss could know any sort of number code like that, yes, I think so.
Well, yeah, but you could also just replace Koloss with Chondra.
Yeah. Like, when Vin is right. controlling them, it's not like she's reading their minds. Whatever knows what they're thinking, it's more like she's possessing them in a way and just mm-hmm. moving their autonomy.
Like, I assume there's like I assume you can control their physical body, you can make them kind of do anything, but like accessing that knowledge, like if you didn't physically like know it in your mind, like there's like a gray area there that I'm kind of interested in.
Yeah. Small little one final little detail. Human brings the dead bodies and the I'm gonna call him a donor close together when he's about to create the new Koloss to limit hemolytic decay. On some level, the Koloss have realized having them so far apart and waiting so long to spike probably weakens them. So he brings them literally almost right on top of each other, so he can do it fairly all at once.
Well, also because he was trying not to show Vin exactly what he was doing, because, like, when he was taking the spikes out of the dead Koloss, he was, like, trying to, like, hide them.
Mm-hmm. I just read it as that was a nice little hemallergic decay after all we've been seeing of it in the epigraphs.
Yeah, it could easily be about hemallergic decay without him even necessarily, like, realizing that that's what he's doing.
I love hemallergy. I don't love hemallergy. That sounds weird. But like, as like this thing in the Cosmere that like our imagination gets to play with. Like, it is such a crazy thing to just run wild with.
Mm-hmm. Anything else for these chapters? Are we all pretty much good to go? Anything else for these chapters, John?
Not until we get into spoilers, and then only one little thing.
Okay, well, we're going right into spoilers then. Formatting. There we go. Next time, we're going to be covering Mistborn, Hero of Ages, Part 3, Chapters 38, 39, and 40. It's only going to be me, Swiggity, and John, because Kay has other plans, which we cannot fault her for.
Also, that means chaos.
It's going to be very short, very chaotic, and we're probably going to forget 500 things that Kay's going to need to correct us on in the next part.
I'm going to have so many questions.
Yes. But it is time to head into the spoiler realm. So if you have not finished this book, the entire series, or potentially the entire Cosmere, then we recommend that you stop here, because it is likely that we will talk about everything and anything. If you are up to date, feel free to stick around, because it is likely that we will bring up details you may have missed or plot threads that are still yet to come. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a like, star, heart, or whatever it is on this podcast, and don't be afraid to comment your own thoughts and predictions. We would love to hear from you. But if this is where we must part, then my name is Rita Warrior, and I have been joined by Swiggity Swoop.
Count the skulls, Sonny.
John?
I am human.
And now you can actually meet it. And Kay.
Have a good one.
And don't forget, there's always another connection. We're back. Welcome to the spoiler realm.
Okay, so what I wanted to say earlier, let me just say this before I forget, because I'm gonna forget if I don't say it, was so about heme allergy. So, Reader, you were talking about how you said that essentially if they run out of allomancers, that heme allergy would run out. That's what you were saying, which is incorrect, because you can spike normal people with heme allergy. I remember.
True, but at this point, you don't really get any powers from that. Not until we saw the...
No, but you still get... But you can still use heme allergy, even...
You still trap a soul in the spike, and... Yeah,
yeah, and you still gain... something, because like the Koloss spikes are all spikes that killed people for their strength. And like, I think if you were a normal person who got spiked with one of those, that like the normal person spikes that you would gain, like that. Like
which raises the question:
strength or mental fortitude, or whatever.
Which I raise the question: then why did Okay, so apparently we're just going through the chapters now. In chapter 34, why did Marsh seek out specifically a, what was it, a smoker? When he could have just grabbed Joe Schmo Ska, stabbed him. Because his whole plan is just to put a hemorrhagic spike in, I forget the king on in Luthadel's
Penrod.
Name. Penrod. Penrod.
It's because he didn't want to give him a useful power. He didn't want to make it obvious that he had access to Allomancy now.
But like, if
a spike strong enough to give Ruin a way into his brain.
But if he could have just taken that from anybody, why didn't he just give him a spike that had no power and just?
Because it had to be strong enough. Like connection for Ruin to be able to get his speak into his brain.
So a person with allomantic powers turned into a spike will give Ruin more access than a person, just a normal person.
I guess I don't know that for 100% fact, but it stands to reason because we know that a spike through someone who is invested will be a more powerful spike.
True. The thing is, if Ruin's only using this as a radio, because, I mean, if he took a rider or a soother, I could understand, like, oh, I give you the power to create the change you wanted in Luthadel, yada, yada, yada. But the fact that he's just using it as a radio.
Right. Also, why spend a useful power on just getting into Penrod's brain when he could put that power into a new Inquisitor? Or true. An existing Inquisitor to make them stronger?
Yeah. Any spoiler notes from this chapter, though? Oh, the waiting period thing. So the hemorrhagic decay that occurs from when you have a spike, you spike somebody, and you have to wait between that time when you spike them and when it gets put in somebody else. Brandon said in the Shardcast Q&A that they have figured out a way to bypass that is no longer an issue now.
I think it's that if you put it in blood, like that's what helps, that's what prevents the decay if it is in blood. So because it's hemallergy, so theoretically, if you get a jar of blood and you stick the spike in, like, you stab it through a person and then you stick it in that jar of blood, like, it won't lose its power.
I would agree with that if the fact we didn't see that already. Because we see that in Secret Histories, and that to slow hemorrhagic decay. Whilst Brandon seemed to be saying there's no more loss of hemorrhagic decay or the half-life death. That problem is completely resolved instead of just slowed down now. Like, maybe they put it in a jar of blood, but the jar is made out of aluminum. And it entraps everything inside so it can't leak out.
So, is he saying that they have, like, a new technique that will, like, make the power stay in the spike longer? Or is it, like, the nature of hemorrhagy itself since Harmony is in
there? That he did not say. It could be a nature thing. But considering how Sazed kind of limited hemorrhagy, the fact that he would allow that kind of tangent seems a bit weird.
But it might not even be on purpose. It might be just the fact that because Ruin is not independent anymore,
And it does seem like a preservation act to keep something from decaying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it allowed for hemallergy to be used in a way that wasn't as brutal.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the lost metal acupuncture we saw.
Yeah.
I'm not excited for that. Anything for 34? Okay.
Those people, those poor people, that's all I wanted to say. Do we know what happens to them? Do we ever go back to that
town? They died. The end. A volcano fell on them, Swiggity.
No.
That's just Schedule Pompeii?
Schedule Pompeii, exactly what I was thinking.
Oh, are you talking about the people in the town that Marsh visited? Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the people in the Lost Metal in the town.
No, not them.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Get to that eventually.
6 years from now.
No, I think it's very pumping. Maybe we get... Oh, you know what would be a really cool mini story is if, like, they rediscover that.
Alamancer checks, first fine.
Yes. The lost city of whatever it was called.
That would be really cool.
But as cool as that is... Like, part of the huge draw to Pompeii is the fact nobody really knew about volcanoes up until that point. And, like, the fascination is that this is the... Nobody knew what was going on. We literally just discovered the city, and now we understand why. Whilst Gadrians have literally started at the point where volcanoes are everywhere. But I do like the Alamancer Jack idea to that.
I was just going to say, and yet these people are caught completely unaware when the thing goes off.
True.
They know about ash mounds, but I don't think they really know about it, the volcanoes, like that they're volcanoes that can erupt and like things that like that can happen.
Possibly. Excuse me. Chapter 35. This is Spook's chapter. Well, we've got Ruin whispering in Spook's ear the entire time. In fact, at one point, he literally just says, kill them. And I really am glad nobody brought that up.
Yeah, we were dancing around it in the spoiler-free section. Of just like, but we love Breeze.
Yeah.
Why would Kelsier say that? Does that mean that Ruin hates Breeze?
No, Ruin just wants to kill everyone.
Ruin hates Breeze with a passion. Ruin's always hated Breeze. He has always regretted the fact that he had to have Breeze a part of the plan. He's like, I gotta get rid of that smug son of a...
Headcanon for me, Ruin like specifically hates Breeze.
It's like, I don't like that guy. Something just irks me wrong. He rubs me the wrong way.
Especially because we all like him.
I really wanted to mention, but I didn't think it would be safe yet. Spook wears the same outfit that he wore in the fire, and I wanted to say flame cloak.
Oh, yeah, he's got his burned cloak on.
I wanted to say flame cloak, but they seem to be building up the survivor of the flames as a secret.
Yeah, I wanted to say survivor of the flames, but I was like, nope, can't say that yet.
It's not in this section where like Sazed thinks they're talking about Kelsier when they're actually talking about Spook, right? That's like in the next couple chapters.
Doesn't sound like one we've covered thus far yet.
I think that's later.
I believe that is
okay.
And there was a line about Quellion is unstable. Yes, it's almost like there's a god whispering in his ear or something.
There's a god of destruction whispering in his ear.
Who else do we know has that?
I don't know what you are talking about.
Certainly not two characters.
I was going to say, who doesn't?
Who doesn't have a spike at this point?
I would say there are three characters.
Drew. Forget about Yeoman.
No, not Yeoman.
Marsh. Duh. I don't know where I was getting Yeoman from.
Like, Yeoman doesn't have a spike. Ruin I'm really has, tired. Ruin tries to spike Yeoman. Like, it mentions that Ruin tried to spike Yeoman a couple times. Even got it in him once, and he ripped it out and threw it away.
Jeez, when did we learn that? Okay. That's important to know.
That's, later on. I think it's in one of the epigraphs.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. Anything else for 35?
Sorry, I didn't have much for that.
Yeah, me neither. 36. This is mainly the 16-16 thing coming into play again. Which is not Kelsier's plan. It is Preservation's plan.
But we do know that it's not confirmation bias. There actually is something to this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually trying to clue them in.
Do we think that Preservation to see the future and all that was like, Yeoman is going to be one of the most... I'm going to be given the superpower. Like, no, he could have been any of the others, but he specifically gave him the ATM power.
I don't think that... Well, also, like, Preservation can see into the future, but it's still, like, not perfectly clear, so I don't think he would have been able to see anything that specific.
But we know that Damu, he at least has, like, 300 years of survival after this. Because he starts to work for the 17th Shard, and then he ends up on Roshar somehow. So, yep. Like, he could be fairly important, therefore it could have been on Preservation's radar a little bit. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I was kind of confused why he got sick longer than everyone else, too.
Oh, do you not remember? Okay, I'm not going to spoil it for you, because I'm going to let you.
Okay.
The spoiler section.
I'm going to raffle you, Swiggity, because it's a good reveal. Oh.
See, Swiggity's going to leave the call, and we're going to go into the spoiler section. Which will not be seen by anybody, because he records it.
Yeah, right. If it's something that comes up in later in the book, and it's only a matter of time, yeah, we'll get to it.
It's only a matter of time. But okay.
I guess I was wondering, like, we're really starting to uncover, like, the nitty-gritty of heme allergy.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anywhere else in the Cosmere that we see heme allergy-esque magic or, like, or it's just straight up heme allergy besides in Mistborn?
Well,
the most recent secret novel, secret book project that just came out. Mm-hmm.
Canticle with the chard.
No, that's not heme allergy.
Well, it is heme allergy esque. They use a spike, input it in, makes a superpowered guy.
I mean, it's not a spike. But yeah,
I guess. Who's allergic?
The sliver that Elegy is like carrying around. It's probably as close as we get to it. But I think like making the chard is more similar to what we were talking about with the Kolos, and how it like takes over their mind and like rewrites their soul.
And I'd also say since there is such a Skadrian presence in that, like they might have influenced it towards like a more hemallergic aspect. Maybe that magic system wasn't ever going to create that, but it's the fact that you did some ruiny type stuff with it. Maybe it's ambition, maybe it's who knows what.
Yeah. And Sanderson has said that heme allergy can be discovered on other planets besides Scadrial without the influence of ruin.
That's why I think it would be such a great little, like in Storm and Archive, in one of the interludes, if like you have a detective character who's following this murder who leaves people with spikes or holes in their chests or everything, where we the readers know, oh shoot, that's not good at all.
Well, and I wonder about the Night Brigade, because they use hemology. That's actually who I was referring to. The Night Brigade uses hemology, and whether or not they discovered hemology from Scadrians, or if they discovered it themselves independent of...
I don't discount the idea of them using hemology. I just don't remember them having a specific line about it.
Is it to find the Dawn Shard?
Yeah.
I was like, there were specific lines about hemology.
I thought you were talking about like their shades or whatever they use to destroy planets. I thought there was like a line about that. I completely blanked on the whole point of them chasing after.
Yeah, it's okay, reader. I was right there with you. I was like trying to think about it. I'm like, when did they? Oh, duh.
Yeah, and they talk about how that they can make you continue to like work with them even after you're dead, which I think has to do partially with the shades, and partially I think my opinion has to do with hemology as well.
Awesome.
Well, that's terrifying.
Yeah. Yep.
But anything in 36, 300 or plus years before that.
Oh, way more than 300 years before that.
I'm gonna cap it at 500, but we know 300 from Era 1 to Era 2, and there's unknown time.
Yeah, so I'm saying way more than 300. Yeah.
Chapter 37!
Yes.
You got the big reveal about human.
Yes, but... we also, in the epigraph, get a little thing. It talks exactly about seekers, like Marsh, being favored recruits, and how they become awesomely powerful. Mm-hmm. And that's how they're able to track Vin through a copper cloud. Wink, wink.
Uh-huh.
Extrapolation. Consideration of what that might mean. Holy crap, Vin can do that. What?
What? Which I'm so... you made a comment like, oh, it got picked up on her seeker radar, and I'm like... But I'm glad none of us brought that up, because like we have talked in length about how, oh, different elementers have different elementic strengths, and that could be applied to here.
Yep.
I'm glad we're all on page on keeping things read and find out mode. Who is...
subtle nod.
Yeah. So, I think I get a bit confused. When Vin was being chased however many chapters ago after meeting with Slow Swift, that was Kelsier.
It started off as Kelsier, and it switched to Ruin part of the way through the chase.
Yes. Who is it this time? Was it
still
Ruin?
Still Ruin.
Okay. Because she makes a comment like the figure was shorter than Ellen. And I'm like, Kelsier's got to be taller than Ellen, right?
We don't know how tall anyone is.
So. True, but like, Kelsier has that.
Also, like, Vin is short, so like...
this is true. but I just wanted that clarified. That was Ruin, right?
Yes, that was Ruin. That was Ruin purposely trying to lead Vin away from the camp.
Gotcha.
Tricky, tricky.
And then...
and the Kolos is... made out of Is it three people or five people?
This five, one, but five? Four spikes, so five
four
souls.
Four spikes and a corpse, yeah.
Well, a near corpse.
Right.
No, yeah, someone who's injured.
Which I imagine if a Koloss were to be used upon somebody who is like peak level fitness, perfectly healthy, they would be a pretty strong Koloss anyway.
Yeah, and when they get spiked, it warps. When that person who becomes the Koloss gets spiked, it warps their soul to the point where they have completely lost their identity from when they were human.
Which is why they also have... So the spikes remain a bit of who they took from. And when you... And I'm guessing that when you take the four spikes and put them into a body, they rip kind of into that person's spirit web and pull at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you take those spikes out to put it into another, they take a bit of that with them. And over time, originally the Lord Ruler would, every time he creates a new Koloss, create a new set of spikes. But since the Lord Ruler hasn't been around, they've been reusing them.
And the law of hemorrhagic decay is in effect because the spikes have to be pulled out of the bodies, and each time they are pulled out, they lose some of their power, so the Koloss retains a little bit more of their humanity.
Because it's also taking that piece of soul with them. And basically, instead of having one soul split apart by four spikes, you now have one soul plus one fourth of a soul.
I don't necessarily know about the whole it's pulling part of the soul with it, like what you're saying, reader, but
that's how I'm envisioning it. I could be completely off the mark, but we know that some piece of a person's soul gets put into a spike, and in considering there are four spikes, they get pulled away. And basically, by the time you've had a Koloss that's been used by through four bodies and is now on the fifth body, then you can say possibly that now it's got one soul in each spike. It's not going to be perfectly lined up that way, I know. But like one piece of each soul in each of the four spikes plus this new fifth one. And by then you've got all basically a whole new person acting up who's got aspects of each of the previous Colossers, Colossies, Colossums, Colossums.
That's so strange. So, like, I guess my question would be, like, when the first Koloss were made, how much personality did they have?
Zip.
How much, like, sentience?
I bet zip.
None, because so when the first Koloss were made, and until the Lord Ruler died, every time a new Koloss was made, they were given a new set. The Koloss were given a new set of spikes to use. They did not reuse their spikes, partially because I think the Lord was trying to use it as insurance, as an extra safety precaution, so that the Koloss wouldn't know how to create new Koloss. By reusing spikes, they would think that each time that they would have to use new spikes, and that hopefully that would cause, like, if something happened to the Lord Ruler, that would cause the Koloss to die, to die off, to just kill themselves.
Also,
Koloss learned how to reuse the spikes, so.
John's comment earlier, how if more investiture is used in spiking allows Ruin a greater bit of control than having a near empty hemorrhagic spike in one person would just, like, if Ruin tried to control him, it would be like trying to direct a rabid dog. Well, now that they have personality and they're not heavily invested, but definitely as much as like a misting, I would say, if not a little bit more so, then Ruin can definitely control them easily.
No, I think the Ruin would would have been able to control the Koloss anyway because of how many spikes they have in them.
Maybe. I guess that's a Brandon question.
Because, well, no, because if we look at in Era 2 with Sazed is able to exert control over people who have 3 or more spikes in them. He is able to actively control those people.
But...
And certain constructs have different numbers of spikes that they need to have in order for him to be able to control them, which is what he gets from Ruin. He gets that control from Ruin, the Ruin side of him. So, therefore, it's the number of spikes. It's not necessarily the reuse of the spikes. It's the number of spikes that they have. So even the original Koloss from, you know, whenever the Lord Ruler originally made the Koloss, those still would have been able to be controlled by Ruin because of the number of spikes that they have in them.
But I'm guessing you're getting the number 3 from the fact that Lassie, well, no, that would be
no,
2.
No, I'm talking about 3, I think it's 3, maybe it's 4. I'm talking about that is from Suit.
I don't think he said specific number, did he?
He did, because he talked about how they could only have a certain number of hemallergic spikes, powers from hemallergic spikes. Because if they put too many in them, then Harmony
he
would be
said
able
too
to...
many.
Yes.
But like, I don't
he
think
said
he said
a number.
Like...
He did say a number. He said a specific number. They knew what the number was.
I'm going to just... Until you got the page, and I can't Weird. Confirm that. I don't remember that. True.
I am remembering this.
I don't remember a specific number. I want confirmation. That's all I'm asking. I'm just asking for confirmation.
If only there
on
was
number.
A website.
But also, like, does it have to do with the number of spikes, or does it have to do with the amount of investiture in the spikes?
It has to do with the number of spikes, I think.
Because we saw that Lassie got taken over with just 2.
Yeah, she's a construct, though.
This is
but
true.
One of them was, like, Trellium, right?
So one of them was of another god's metal. It's just, I feel like there could be an argument for how much a person can control.
The more spikes a creature has, the easier it is to take control. At least 4 spikes are needed before Harmony can take control of humans.
Okay.
So, but like a Chondra with only 1 spike cannot be controlled by Ruin or Harmony. They need at least 2 spikes. Because Chondra are constructs, not humans.
Okay, in which we also know that the number of spikes a person can have has been limited by Harmony, but also could it be that preservation now being intermingled with that has altered how much control or how easily ruin, quotation mark, can control? Considering... So, Harmony is the, not balance, but the combination of preservation and ruin. Could it be that the fact that they're mixing the preservation has offset the level in which the ruin control hemallergic construct or creature?
So, you're saying that it would be that the number of spikes needed for Harmony to control someone would be higher than the number of spikes that Ruin would need to control someone would be lower. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that if we were to take Harmony, shove him back to the current events, that Harmony would have more difficult of a time controlling, let's say, human than Ruin does.
Well, human has 4 spikes in him, so...
Yeah, but also, I can't come up with a good example off the top of my head.
You're good. No, I don't think so. I don't think the number would change for Harmony versus Ruin, the number of spikes needed to control
people. I'm going to just chime in with two thoughts. First of all, Harmony is Ruin plus. So anything Ruin can do, Harmony can do ish.
Yes.
Yeah,
but
there's a little bit of a caveat on that, but also when ascended to vesselhood, Sazed was able to change how the magics work, which would include hemallergy, so he could dick around with it all he wants.
But we also know that the vessel is pretty much only able to do that with as much as they want at that moment when they aren't being affected by the intents of the shards. Which, that's how he was able to move the planet. And while nowadays he can't, how did he describe it? He can't, like, do anything without risking the two shards he holds colliding with each other. Like, he's become so entrapped by, I have to be harmonious, I have to keep a balance between this, that even as low as 300 years later, he can only do basically tiny little things. I can tell people to go places. Like, I'm thinking Era 2, we really see Harmony use magic in a way to affect the world. Except maybe the off-screen defense of schedule from autonomy. Every other time it's like, hey, I'm sending Bleeder to go mess with the Wax. So that Wax will one day save Wayne. So Wayne can one day return to Wax. And Wax can one day do all that so that Wayne can end up on the boat to save the world. Boy, that's a convoluted plan. But like, aside from when Sazed ascends and moves everything back to place, do we really have any instance of when he uses the shards?
Well, I mean,
communication via
except for the hemallergic radio, that we also know that preservation had the power to listen. That doesn't make a lot of sense.
What do you mean?
Because hemallergy is of Ruin.
No, but it didn't. It
Sazed said when you have the spike in your ear, preservation can listen, Ruin can speak.
But so it's the hole in your spirit web. It's that hemallergy causes a hole in your spirit web that different shards can interact with and can do different things with. So with Ruin, it gives him the ability to talk to you and possibly to influence you and possibly control you. With Preservation, it gave Preservation the ability to listen to your thoughts, but he couldn't interact or influence in any way.
I just find it a bit weird that Preservation gets a power from hemallergy.
Well, no.
Or is
Any shard.
Okay.
It's the effects of hemallergy. And any shard would be able to utilize that hole in your spirit web. So if let's say cultivation was over on Gadriel, cultivation would be able to do something. We don't know what, but be able to do something to the people who have hemallergic spikes in them.
But it only works when you have the spike in, when Wex has the earring on, for example.
Yeah.
So that is a effect of hemallergy. That part just is a bit of... I get what you're saying, that it creates the hole, and maybe when you remove the tiny little spike, the hole just fills up immediately. In your spirit web, like, so inconsequential that it just heals over. But like the fact, like, it pushes through and it causes that still gives preservation of it. That just irks me, because we see when Vin takes out her earring.
But the thing about it is, it's not just preservation. That's what I'm trying to get across. you reader. It's not just preservation.
I know, but preservation gets a... And I know you're saying everybody gets one. So I'm guessing, what would other people be able to do?
Yeah, that's horrifying. We don't know.
We don't know. Okay, but I feel like we've gone...
Well, there's like... It's similar. I feel like it's similar to when like the fused take over the Parshendi. It's like, I'm thinking they're like opening up their spirit web. And so it's like, maybe we don't see like one-to-one, like the piercing happening, but we've seen like corruption. We've seen influence. You know? Yeah. I'm wondering if you could spike a fused into somebody.
Probably.
If Odium was there.
I would think so. If he had the Spren or... I'm just going to say Spren to keep it from getting too confusing.
Right.
If you had the soul.
If you have... And especially consider... It would have to be probably of Terra...
Terra Vodium?
No, not Terra Vodium. What's... What was Odium's vessel name?
Racium.
So it would have to be of Racium, because we also know that conducts investiture. So probably you would have to do a spike that has like the gem heart on the back that pushes it through, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I saw a wob. Somebody was asking if what happened to Jezreen at the end of Oathbringer was technically hemallergy. And the answer Brandon gave was that some philosophers in the cosmos might call it that. But there's technically kind of different.
The most non-answer Brandon could get.
Well, it's it's different because it's... Yeah. It's different. I would agree that it's different. It's not hemallergy. Because you're not pulling a part of someone's soul out and attaching it to someone else's body.
I think because Jezreen died because... Boy, are we off the deep end. Jezreen died because he couldn't replenish himself. And basically, his soul died near instantaneously. Because part of the whole deal on why they got to live forever is yada, yada, yada. If somehow Jezreen were able to stay alive in it, and then they stabbed somebody else, I think Jezreen would have shot into them. They would have body morphed into Jezreen.
I just think it's controlled hemallergy. But I think then you could have considered it hemallergy, but possibly. But I also don't... I wouldn't necessarily consider it hemallergy because it's... Hemallergy, I feel like, is just part... You're taking part of someone's soul. You're not taking the whole thing.
Yeah.
You're taking part of someone's spirit web. You're not taking their whole soul. With Jezreen, it was his whole soul that was taken out. It wasn't just a part of it. It wasn't just, like, his connection.
I think that has to do, though, with the gem heart and how it has to fill the void. And how it sucked up more. I think it could be classified as hemallergy. I just think that the fact that it was racium kind of altered that. But
okay, let's focus back on Mistborn, because we've been talking about distracted by Stormlight.
I don't think we have anything else to talk about. I do want, since we brought up god metals, I do want to throw out a quick theory of, I think there's going to be a reflective god metal one day where a person can be burning like steel, and instead of pointing at the god metal, it'll bounce away from them and it would point at something else. Like still to something metal. But I'm saying like, so if there was like a chandelier above my head and like the god metal in front of me.
Makes no sense.
It could bounce against the god metal to the chandelier and I can pull on that one where it pulls in that direction.
Why not just pull on the chandelier at that point?
Because that one pulls it that way instead of directly onto my head. I don't know. It's just an idea I had. I thought it would be fun. I want to get it on recording in case anything happens.
That's how they get their gravitational warp drive to work.
Okay. Does anyone have anything else?
Nope.
Nope, I feel like we lost John at some point.
Yeah, definitely happened.
Sorry, man.
I'd be all about talking about the Stormlight stuff, but I'm laid down for the day.
Sorry, John. Didn't mean okay. to lose you there.
It's okay. God knows I've been on the other side of that many times.
Well, that's just gonna about cover it for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us in our ramblings and predictions. We cannot wait to cover what is to come. This has been Cosmere Connections, and we hope to see you next time.
Bye.
Adios, amigo.
I will munch your head.
Bye.
'I saw the greatest Kaladin cosplay today on the Facebook group. It was so good. Did you guys see that?
I think I did.
Had
I saw one recently. So I don't know spear if it's the same one you're talking about.
Oh yeah, someone posted their cosplay that they're planning to wear to the convention.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I saw that too.
Without us all looking at the picture, I'm pretty sure we're talking about the same one, but...
My brother had one. I don't remember what year it was. He had a Kaladin costume for Halloween.
That's so cool. Someday I shall make a mist cloak. I want to make a mist cloak, but I want it to be like kind of sproingly. Like I see everybody's in and they're cool, but you know, the tassels are just kind of hanging there. I want mine to be like flowing around. So maybe we put some little springs in each tassel to get them kind of elevated a bit.
The tube pipe, the...
Like pipe cleaners?
Sure, that.
Something like that.
I am operating on very little sleep.
What is that?
That is one of the things I always recommend on freaking...
Thingiverse?
Yeah. That I've always wanted to print.
It's just a little, like, box you can put paper clips and stuff in, but it's got this neat little, like, aperture.
That is satisfying.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's going in the Christmas gifts.
Nice.
Give me 1 second, I'll be right back.
It's also very fidgety. Like, it's... I don't know. It's fun to play with.
Yeah. There's one for, like, glasses, I remember.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff I'm doing is, like, fidget things.
Cool. I used to do a lot of, hey, happy birthday, happy Merry Christmas. Here's a 3D print thing that I had. I thought you specifically would want, but then I'm like, do people just think I'm cheap and just want to 3D print them stuff?
I mean, I worry about that, because like, but at the same time, it's something you took the time to make and, you know, put together, and it still costs materials to make. So it's like, it's not like, and these, this kind of stuff sells for like anywhere from 15 to like $30 on Etsy.
True.
So like, it's still a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let them make you feel any less of a person.
I'll try.
Get my notes out from 2 weeks ago. Possibly more.
It would have been 2 weeks.
Okay.
I freaking come home, and apparently, like, every studio has decided to drop trailers today. What the heck happened?
Hello.
Oh, the, also partially is that the, SAG-AFTRA strike, ended.
Ah.
Today. So...
Just Ghostbusters, Inside Out, Arcane. Hey.
What are we talking about?
all the trailers that apparently dropped today and yesterday.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think partially has to do with the writer's strike in being called off, like ended for a couple days.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I saw this article the other day, and it got me a little excited. It said, basically, the challenges that the Mistborn movie will have to overcome. On Screen Rant. I was like, hey, somebody's thinking about it.
Nice to know people at Screen Rant enjoy it.
Right? A little bit promising. I was like, I'm going to click on this just so it gets that much more traction.
Yeah.
I will say, Brandon's, he wants it to be an animation. It's just nobody respects animation that much. I think Brandon should probably go out on a limb and try to be the first person to do that.
Yeah,
I understand the risk of it. I understand the risk of it. But I feel like the fact that... Sorry.
I'm just going to say it is very difficult because of the culture around animation that we have in our country. The culture we have around animation is very much animation is for little kids. Like, I think
obviously
if,
those people have never heard of hentai.
I was about to say, if we were in Japan, they have a different culture around animation.
Yes, they do. Very much.
So,
I also
animation
sorry.
Is for adults. You're good. Animation is for adults, and you see it often for adults. But in the U.S., we don't have that culture around animation, and in fact, it's the opposite. It's very much animation is for little kids.
Could be an awesome kids show, though. Like.
Yeah, you know the scene where, like, the Inquisitors have tortured and killed all of Cayman's crew and there's blood everywhere?
Well, they'd have to clean it up a bit.
Just Inquisitors in general with things pounded through their face.
But, like, I was watching anime when I was a kid, you know, like an Adult Swim late at night.
Yeah.
So there's some like, middle ground there. I'm thinking of... I am literally thinking of anime, like, more...
Attack on Titan.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like, more like Arcane.
Yeah. But I also don't think Mistborn or any of the most of the Cosmere books work well as a movie. I think they should be like split into parts and have those parts be released as hour long episodes. Like have on Netflix, for example, have Mistborn the Final Empire. And it's the show, and then have season one or episode one be part one, the survivor, and then episode two is part two, and have the episodes be an hour plus long, but have it be all of it. Don't try to cram everything into 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that would be tough. It certainly wouldn't be the
you
same
saw
thing.
Saw what they did to Ender's Game.
Yeah.
That was awful.
I don't remember. Granted, I didn't like Ender's Game the book very much, but I don't remember hating the movie.
I feel like if they really wanted to do it justice, they'd have to make like 9 movies for the original Mistborn trilogy alone.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing that people have to remember about movies, about books that are made into movies, is that it's an adaptation. It's not going to be exactly how you picture it in your mind. Things are going to be taken out, things are going to be changed, because it's an adaptation. That's what happens when you adapt something. You change it slightly. So
yeah. But there's a difference between that and imagine a Mistborn where Elend and Kelsier are like buddies for the whole series.
No, imagine I understand.
A Percy
I'm saying
Jackson
that there's.
Movie.
I know. I'm not I'm not saying that there are not some bad adaptations out there, but I also, like, when you think about movie adaptations for things, honestly, my opinion, don't really think it needs to be turned into a movie or a TV show. I think they're great as books, and I don't think they need to be made into a visual medium like that. Because things won't work as well in a visual medium.
I 100% agree with you.
Respect that.
If they're going to do anything, they should make a new story set in the world of.
That would be cool. But, like, I also want to do the details. I want to have...
But it's not going to have the details. It's not going to. You're going to be disappointed.
Not those details. Not those details. I want to do, like, the music, the sounds. I want to have every different type of allomantic metal have, like, its own rhythm to it. And have, like, at the ball scene that we had, that we last talked about, have, like, Vin and Ellen each have a theme that sings together in that moment, and then, but you've also have Vin's theme works alone and Ellen's theme works alone, but most of the time you see them together. And then in the final battle, you have Ellen's theme on its own, and then when Vin helps him, Vin's theme overshadows it. Like, the music can always be an awesome detail. And I see that in my mind. And have literally call it the tone of preservation, the tone of ruin, the tone of yada yada. And have that be when all of the metals are used, or when you see a hemallergic creature, have like a singular type of beat always, no matter what type of Inquisitor, Chondra, Kolos play, but have it be different, but at that same level. Like,
who would do the,
those
you're thinking
details.
like John Williams?
Danny Elfman.
Danny Elfman.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
And it would require so much work because you have to know every tiny thing, and you've got to squeeze in 16 plus different types of rhythms from one music note, basically.
I will
that
do
can all work
thing.
In tandem. And...
I
think those details.
The other thing that would happen if it became a movie is, like, we go from these books that we love and we feel kind of special whenever we see somebody else that likes them, to it being like a household name, you know. As fans, like, what do you guys think? Is it kind of nice right now having our own special little Cosmere world, or would you want to see, like, you know, Kaladin t-shirts at Hot Topic?
I would love that. I would love to be able to talk to anybody, like, hey, who's your favorite? What's your Mistborn type? And they would be like, Soother. And I'll be like, oh, that's a nice pick. I would love for that to happen as much as it's like, hey, what's your Hogwarts house?
I feel like that's what it would be. These books are primed to go
as
it, at that big.
As it is, Swiggity, Sanderson is already becoming a household name, especially anyone who reads fantasy, Sanderson is very much becoming a household name. Like, when I first started reading Sanderson, when I was in, like, middle school, no one knew who Sanderson was. No one, like, I didn't know anyone. The only people that I knew who knew about Sanderson were people that I had introduced to Sanderson.
Yeah.
Yep. Now when I, like, I have a knitting group that I go to and I chat with, and there are people there who have read Sanderson, who have read different parts of different Sanderson books on their own, and I find this out and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And, like, I didn't even have to be the one to introduce you to it anymore. Like, I'm coming across more people who are reading his books, which is just, it's fantastic. It's really, like, wonderful to, like, see.
I just remember being a kid, right? And we went to McDonald's, like, several times because they had Lord of the Rings toys. And my dad was like, we have to collect all of these. Like, you don't understand.
Yeah, Tolkien is...
a tier above, a good few tiers above.
No, Tolkien is not above anything. The only reason he's venerated is because he was one of the first. Yeah. I would say the first mainstream.
That's why he's the tier above. He is the doesn't put originator.
That doesn't put you above. That makes you just like the benchmark of like readable stuff.
I don't think it puts you above, but it's like this is the family member that got us to this point, and we need to respect that. Granted, there can be like more famous family members down the line, but this is the one we owe everything to.
Definitely feel like Sanderson took like...
I disagree with your premise.
I understand.
Like what people thought fantasy was if they had just read like Lord of the Rings and made it something more accessible and more modern. Like I love Sanderson's voice. People always give him crap for his prose not being as poetic. I think that's bull. I think he's a beautiful writer, but he writes in a way that can be understood and that's easy to translate. Mm-hmm. Whereas Tolkien is beautiful writing as it is, you know, it's a little difficult Tolkien's to parse. Poop. Yeah.
I can't read Tolkien very well, to be honest.
It's poop. I can't even get through Fellowship. It's no, just bad. Nope, can't do it.
I just had trouble reading The Hobbit. But Hobbit's special because it's literally just... because literally, you've got then the Battle of the Five Armies occurred. Page and a half later, it's over. And they put an entire movie in a page and a half. Ah!
Yeah, because The Hobbit was meant for his kids.
Mm-hmm. And the kids kept...
fighting in war and stuff.
And the kids kept saying, like, Dad, didn't you say that the door was yellow last time? And the kids, and Tolkien was like, stupid kid, walked off, grabbed a piece of paper, and he kept writing out all the notes as he told these stories.
Yeah, because it was a bedtime story.
But have you guys seen the recording? Like, there is an actual recording of when Tolkien was talking about how it first started, and he had, like, a page of homework, like a stack of homework assignments he had to do, and he was like, he calls it like very laborious, and then he picks up a paper and he found this one blank, glorious, and he started to write, in a hole of ground there lived a hobbit. And it's like normally it's just that is an author getting the start and that is magical in its own, but this is Tolkien, the godfather of the grandfather of fantasy, who inspired Dungeons and Dragons, who created the entire mythos of fantasy as we know it, with elves and dwarves and everything in between. And this is him literally picking up a piece of paper and like Walt Disney drawing Mickey Mouse just started imagination. And like the pure wonder that was in his voice just gets me every time. And I love it.
I have not seen that recording. That sounds beautiful.
It's like a really short. I could probably find
historic
it
moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, say what you will about the guy, like there's no doubt he inspired a whole slew of writers to do similar work. I feel like if we didn't have Tolkien, we wouldn't have Sanderson or Abercrombie.
Mm. Have you guys seen the thing about dwarves and how people? Or his publisher was like, you can't spell dwarves W-D-W-A-R-V-E-S. It's got to be D-W-A-R-F-S. And Tony was like, no, I wrote the dictionary. I'll do as I damn well please. Or the fact that Germans during World War II like wrote him a letter saying, hey, are you a Jewish? Because we want to put your book out, but we don't want to do it if you're Jewish. And he wrote back in like the most Tolkien-like way, oh, I'm very sorry to say that I am not in fact Jewish, F you. But it was like a page long, poetically written, not at all rude. And it's just like very, it's beautiful.
I, I did hear one time somebody asked him the question on everybody's mind. Hey, why didn't the Eagles just bring them to Mordor? And I think
he said, mission.
I think he said, shut up.
Because it's a stealth mission, and nothing ruins a stealth mission more than giant eagles flying in.
Well, there's also, you know, the Nazgul riding the wyverns. Like, that would have been a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And lots and lots of orcish archers.
Mm-hmm.
I was always told, too, that the eagles, like, they were kind of a proud species, and you couldn't... Like, Gandalf, they saved him that one time, but you couldn't really just ask them to do whatever you want.
Well, there's also the fact that the eagles are not just, like, animals. They're sentient in The Lord of the Rings, and they would have been subject to the power of the ring as well. So, yeah.
Which brings us to the rat theory. Do you guys know the rat theory? Where, so we see that animals can be affected by the ring, or that some animals don't. All they had to do was get a rat or a mouse or whatever, put the ring around that, and just carry the rat, and they would have been fine. Because we see, Samwise carry Frodo, and he's not at all affected by it. So, carrying somebody who is under the influence does not get you influenced. Therefore, you can just have somebody else have it and carry them. So just put it on a rat, carry the rat, hunky-dory.
But then you risk possibly losing the rat.
That's true. Can you imagine an invisible rat? Yeah.
Also, then Frodo would have had to give up the ring.
Also, when someone's wearing the ring, the wraiths can see them and seek in on them, so you'd have had to contend with the ring wraiths the whole time.
You can also put it around the rat's neck. Like,
yes, but then the ring would simply choke out the rat and kill it, and then fall off. Because the ring has a will of its own.
True. But back to Cosmere.
Yeah, if they had Vin, I know this would have been a problem.
Nope.
She could have single-handedly taken
push their way straight up Mount Mordor.
Yeah.
Right.
One does not simply steel push into Mordor.